Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I am your host, Daniel Fisher, and along with me, I have the Megatron to my Devastator, Mike Perna. How you doing today, Mike?
Daniel, I believe I made it quite clear on our last episode, me Grimlock.
No, Mike, you gotta realize, I'm a week away from getting to buy the Transformers collectible card game at Gen Con. It's Wednesday. So this time next week, I will be in my hotel. Actually, I'll just be finishing dinner with Kevin Cook and the guys from Norse Foundry. And I'll be in my hotel getting ready to be like, I'm going to get there. I'm going to buy the cards before anybody else does. And you know what's going to happen? I'm going to get there and they're like, you're an exhibitor. You can't buy these cards yet.
One, they will never ever turn away people who have money. Did we ever figure out what booth is actually selling them?
No, we didn't. But, and you know, I was turned away one time with money in hand at the, when the Harry Potter Battle for Hogwarts first came out. They were turning around, they were turning away the exhibitors and saying, you're an exhibitor, you can't buy this.
See, my only experiences with all things Gen Con has always been that there have actually been titles that have completely sold out before the con even opened.
Right, and that does happen because the exhibitors buy them and resell them at their booths. So I see that all the time. But I'm excited.
But yes, this is going to be our official Gen Con preview episode, as this one will be airing kind of, 3 days prior to Gen Con actually opening up?
Yeah, just a couple days. And we're going to be, this comes out Monday, and then I'll be driving up at 4:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, all the way to Indianapolis on Wednesday, and getting there about lunchtime and meeting up with my folks.
Well, for those of you who might not be aware of the fact that Daniel is going, or at least the purpose behind Daniel's trip to Gen Con, this is not an official in-roads trip for him.
No, it's not.
Other than, and I will say this a couple times throughout this episode, there is a meetup for anybody who is going to be at Gen Con, who might be listening to this, on Saturday. You can find the details in the tavern. I'm really excited that this is happening because not a single member of the InRoads leadership team was involved in making this happen.
TR was kind of involved. And I do kind of consider TR a little bit of membership team.
Leadership team. Yes. It's definitely not the B team. He's among the outward expression of, yes. but none of us, not me, not Daniel, not Sean, not Jeff, none of us were involved in planning this and making this happen, but it's happening. All I did was send some swag out there. So,
well, I'll tell you, if you want to see me at Gen Con, I'll be at booth 355, the Norse Foundry booth, selling dice. I'm actually working it. Normally, the way I do Gen Con, I'll either be there as a pack mule for Kevin Cook, or I'll be there with Game Church. And this year, Game Church didn't go, and I was offered to go and have my way paid, and they pay me to sell dice for Norse Foundry. So I'm excited about that.
Which, I mean, to be fair, is hardly twisting your arm.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm really good friends with Drew. He's a really good guy, and he's in the tavern as well. He tries to support us when he can, and he tries to support me when he can as well. So this is just another way he can support me. So
I sadly will not be in attendance this year. There have been a number of people who have asked me if I will. Here's the thing, y'all. Gen Con is an exorbitantly expensive affair.
Yes.
And so the possibility of me even beginning to think about the chance of getting out there is not going to happen. But that doesn't mean that I'm not psyched about it. Not only because of the fact that, Gen Con is a big thing, but also because, you know, I will be enjoying Gen Cant with the rest of the world. And, you know, I do want to, before we get into anything, I just want to throw out that kind of, I don't know, an ad? just letting people know about Gen Cant, because every year there's always at least a handful of people that have started listening to us that are new to the board gaming hobby. So I always want to make sure that we don't go into this just assuming that everyone knows what we're talking about.
Gen Cant, the best con you don't have to go to.
Yeah.
That's the tagline.
Gen Con is literally the biggest board gaming convention in the United States. Arguably, and I do say arguably because people do argue about this, it is the biggest in the world, between this and Essen in Germany. So obviously there's lots of people who want to go there. There are so many different games that are being released at this. It's obscene. And we'll get to that, trust me. So lots of people every year want to be at Gen Con, but I can't remember who started it or what it was, but it was basically somebody saying, you know, everybody's talking about going to Gen Con and I'm going to Gen Cant. And it started off just as a silly joke and like, ha ha ha. But the internet being the internet, you know, people, it became a thing and more people started talking about Gen Cant and Gen Cant. And before you know it, it became a thing, and companies started donating games to be raffled off, and there were contests and all sorts of different stuff around Gen Cant. And it's an event that I follow pretty much every year, other than the ones that I've been at Gen Con. We actually ended up donating to the prize pool last year. Sadly, we can't do that this year because we simply don't have anything to give to the prize pool. But Gen Cant, for those of us who aren't going to be at Gen Con, is still a ton of fun to follow along. You can find them on Twitter. You can find them on their own webpage. If you just look up Gen Cant, you will be able to find that out. I will be printing up my badge for this year. I do it every year. I decided that I was going to be a very important gamer, and I was going to rep Inroads at Gen Cant.
You know, Gen Cant really has become a thing, and the reason why I know this is I'm getting spam for it.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Yeah, like, I follow, Carolina Gaming Tables?
Carolina Game Tables.
Yeah, the Blacks, and they said it's like, going to Gen Cant, check out our gaming tables.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely a thing. Yeah. When you're dealing with, literally, like I said, it's definitely the biggest in the U.S., and it's arguably the biggest in the world. That gets some attention, and so anything that kind of catches fire off of that is also going to be pretty huge.
Yeah.
So, yes, I will be at Gen Cant. I don't know how I'm going to celebrate this. It will probably just involve me being at my house. For those of you who are going to be doing that, check that out. Get in on their cool contests. A lot of them are literally just tweet at them, and you can potentially win obscene numbers of games. It's a fun time, and it's a way to kind of lessen the FOMO, the fear of missing out. It's a way to lessen that, because cool things are happening even for those of us who aren't at Gen Con. But before we get talking about all the craziness that's happening, and we're not even going to get to all the craziness that's happening, because, and I just double-checked this right before we started. Now, Daniel, you know that Board Game Geek puts out a preview.
Yes.
And what it is that companies will contact the folks at Board Game Geek and say, this is what we're bringing to Gen Con. And it's always been crazy. In fact, there was I can't remember if it was last year or the year before that I ended up having to do two posts of a Gen Con preview, because I did one. So much other stuff got released afterwards that I had to do a second Gen Con preview because there were that many titles that interested me. This year makes all of that look like chicken feed, because if you include games that are available, aka you can buy them, games that will be demo only, and games that technically are not still available to retail but were officially released at like Origins or Dice Tower Con. But if you give all that stuff together, 540 different games are all being released at Gen Con, or at least will be there at Gen Con.
Do you know how many of those games I'm excited about?
How many of those games are you excited about?
I haven't looked at the list, so none.
My goodness. No, I completely understand. There's so much. And the fact that you're going to be there means that you don't have to live vicariously through the wonders of the internet. You can actually just go and see things.
Well, you know, it's also a thing that you always send me a text. Go check this out right now. At this booth. Yes, go here now.
Yes. Yes, I do. And by the way, I fully expect that will in fact happen repeatedly. And by the way, when we start talking about games that I think are worth valuing, several of them are going to be, you know, on a list that I'm going to give you that you need to experience and report back to me.
Yeah, well, you know, I've got people, because, you know, during the actual hours that the convention hall's open, I'll be working, but I've already got people going, you need to go to this playtest here, we're going to do this, what are you doing this night, and I'm excited about that because I get to spend some time with my friends, but, you know.
So, yeah, let's kind of look into that for a second, because before we get into talking about all the incredible nerdiness that is going through some of the stuff that's happening at Gen Con and what people can expect and what's getting us excited about it, because that's pretty much what every even remotely board game related podcast that's in existence is talking about now. Mm-hmm. You're going, and yeah, you're not going as, you know, random person who's going to be just playing cool games. You're going as somebody who's going to be a part of it, and you know, because of the fact that you're not just going to be there to be one among the throng of shoppers, you wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about why you go to Gen Con, because I've made the argument myself that it'll be a long time before Inroads as an entity goes to Gen Con because it's so expensive and it's hard for us to connect with people and all this stuff. You're going to sell us on why Gen Con is awesome.
Okay. Well, I will say I do have a shopping list, okay? And I will name it up. I want two of the Transformers collectible card game starter decks. I want a Decepticon theme deck and an Autobots theme deck. Then I want the official Gen Con dice of the year because I've seen what they look like and they're amazing. It's like they almost glow from the center of the die. It's awesome. And then there's a set of Chessex I want right now. These are the lustrous black with gold letters. Yes, I know the dice I want by their name. And I know how many dice.
Oh, Daniel, don't get me wrong. Anybody who's been listening to us for any length of time understands that you're going to nerd out on dice. We all know this.
Yeah, and that's really the only things I'm actually looking to buy there. You know, I will pick up other stuff. Hopefully, I'm going to look at some Conan the Barbarian things, you know, during my downtime, and I'm also going to look at the Flash Gordon stuff from Pinnacle Entertainment Group for Savage Worlds. But really, outside of actually working there, Gen Con, it's not about shopping for me. It's actually getting to hang out with friends that I only get to see once or twice a year and sitting down and playing games with or just spending time with them in general. You know, that's how I'm planning out my entirety of the trip in the evenings. You know, I've got people trying to get me into, like, these beta tests and stuff. But, like, the first night there, I'm hitting up and having dinner with Kevin. And, you know, I've talked about him before on the podcast. And the only reason he goes is to buy dice. And, you know, I'm just going there to chill out with him and Laura for a while. And just, you know, I haven't seen him since Christmas. And then hopefully on Tuesday or Friday, I'll get to have lunch with the Knight family. And because that's kind of become a tradition for us. We all just go out for lunch and walk down to this noodle place and eat a bowl of noodles and go back to work.
There you go.
And just hanging out with him, his wife, and his daughters and stuff. It's really cool. And then, you know, Friday night, I get to hang out with all my DICE buddies because we have our annual DICE Club membership. Remember meeting there at the, of all places, we don't get a place at Gen Con. We go to the mall and sit at the food court so we don't have to argue over food. So we talk about dice and we show off dice and we trade dice and it's really cool. And Saturday night's going to be probably my favorite night of the entire trip is when I get to hang out with, you know, the Knight family again and Riddle, and we have to play board games together. I mean, it's all about friends. It's, you know, I see these people and they make new friends at Gen Con, which is awesome because they get involved in these games. I've seen people change numbers, email addresses, just over a game that they've been playing, and they keep in contact. And they're like, hey, I'm going to be at Gen Con this year. We hanging out. It's really cool. And I just hope I get to see all my buddies that I make every year.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I had a number of people reach out to me. Like, are you going to be at Gen Con this year? Are you going to be at Gen Con this year? And I'm like, no.
Well, see, people, you know, if they listen to us talk, Gen Con was the first place I met you in person.
It's true.
And the first thing I did was give you a big bear hug.
It's also true.
Yeah, because I hug everybody. If you walk up to me and say, hey, Daniel, the first thing you're going to get is a big hug from a big man. And it's going to feel weird because I don't have my beard right now. So, and, you know, and I was talking to Derek the other night. I was like, are you sure you can't sneak into Gen Con? I would like to hang out with you, but he can't make it this year.
But yeah, no, convention season for those of us who are adult gamers, it's basically summer camp for us.
Yes.
It's when we see all the people that we don't get to see any time other than these conventions. It's a chance to stay up late, eat food that's terrible for us, and generally have a ludicrously good time. It is summer camp for grown folks.
That's it. That I was trying to figure out what to relate it to, but that's exactly what Gen Con is.
To be fair, I'd love to take credit for coming up with that, but I blatantly stole it from the guys at the Secret Cabal. It is. There's no other way to describe it other than summer camp for grown folks.
Yeah, but it's fun though. I love it. It's great. It's the greatest thing in the world.
Like I said, as much as I want to, you know, poo-poo it as far as, you know, as an inroads trip, I can't really justify it. I will say that every year that I went to Gen Con, I always had fun. I always had an absolutely amazing time at that convention. And, well, you know, maybe someday in the future, should things open up, I'd love to go again, but it's crazy to be a part of something that huge.
Well, it's going to be my saddest trip ever, also, because this is my last Gen Con.
Oh, buddy.
It's because I got to put all my time to Gary Con, which is a lot better of a trip.
Yes. Because I've said it before, and I'll say it again, I need you at Gary Con.
My wife likes to point out, you know, she's like, you're only allowed one trip a year. This is special circumstances.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's another reason why I don't go, because I have to prioritize.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know a bunch of people who are saying that this is their first year that they're going, and I will tell you that there is nothing like it to be, I won't even say be a part of the throng, because wow, that's intimidating. Like, I'm an extrovert who loves a large crowd, and even I was like, oh, this is oppressive.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing though, like, and I'll tell anybody, because, you know, I've done a lot of trips for a game church, and that's how, you know, I started going to cons was through game church. This was probably one of the better trips that they ever offered. And the reason being is, especially for people with younger eyes, is probably the best way to put it. Because some of the cosplay at, like, Dragon Con can get fairly raunchy, even during the middle of the day.
Well, Dragon Con is its own animal.
Yeah, and that's the other big trip I used to go to. But when I started going to Gen Con, I just fell in love with it.
But yeah, no, it is an amazing experience. And I'll even say that even if you go once and never go again, that would still be of value to be a part of that. Because, you know, ultimately, as much as we want to talk about and cite the numbers that say that board gaming is growing and this hobby is growing, and, I mean, technically it is, but in a lot of ways, it's still very niche. Like, there's still a lot of times when I have to explain what we do. And not even explain what we do at Inroads, but also just explain gaming. Like, as a hobby, that there are games that are worth playing, that Monopoly is not the end-all and be-all, that even Catan is not the end-all and be-all, that game is multiple decades old. Like, to a lot of people, like that's, like, the new hotness. And I'm like it's weird to be in that place, because I am one of those guys who follows all the news sites, and I check out all the reviews, and I am that guy. I've lost track of the number of podcasts and YouTube channels I follow. So the idea that somebody doesn't know that is weird to me, and it's why when we do this podcast, I have to stop myself and say, wait a minute, somebody might not know what we're talking about right here.
Yeah.
So to be at Gen Con is to literally be a part of a throng that is roughly 50,000 people strong, all of whom, to one degree or another, know exactly how awesome this thing is and are with you in that idea. And that's, it's cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, it really is. And we were just talking just a second ago about, you know, like Catan being the new thing for some people because they're just getting into it. Conversation officially yesterday with my neighbor as I was rolling trash cans around. He's like, so you're into board games, huh? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I just got one. I was like, okay, what is it? He's I go, pandemic. He's like, yeah. I said, I don't have anybody to play it with. I said, now you do.
They just made the announcement that they're doing a special fancy swanky 10-year anniversary edition of Pandemic.
Oh, don't get me started on that. One of the guys I'm going up with, he had his Pandemic signed by the creator last year, and he got to sit down and play test some games with him too. And I was like, what in the world? Thanks, man.
Well, I can't say that I've met Matt Leacock yet, but I can say that I met Rob Daviau. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah. But, yeah, he won't get his Pandemic out now. It just sits on the shelf. I'm like, you want to play that? He's like, no, it's a collector's item. I said, no, it's not. It's a game. Play it.
Yeah. I've never been one of those guys who you know, is altogether worried about the condition of things. If a thing gets well-worn, it's well worth getting a new copy if I need to. But anyway, all of this talk about these shenanigans, we're going to have to talk about some of these things.
I know.
If nothing else, I want to gush and I want to give you a list of things that I might live vicariously through you.
Fallout. I can look at Modiphius' new Fallout game that hasn't been released yet.
The miniatures war game? I have high hopes for this.
Yes, I do too. Actually, I got to see the miniatures last year, unpainted. And then they were set up right next to the Games Workshop table. And so I looked, I said, if I can get some paint, can I paint these? And I leaned over to the Games Workshop guys and said, hey, can I borrow some paint? And they gave me such the worst look ever. And I was like, okay, sorry guys, sorry. Two thin coats. And turned around and walked away. So, yeah. And if you're a Wargamer that plays 40K and you listen to the Warhammer TV, you will understand two thin coats.
Yeah, but no, there is so much. Like I said, when I did my preview, and I have established these guidelines over years of doing this, I always try to do the exact same thing based on what I think people want. And no one's contradicted me on this, and so I'm going to go with it because apparently our audience does like to hear this. I only go by stuff that's on the Board Game Geek preview list because it's literally impossible to track down anything that might be out there possibly. I always go by just the board game stuff because, yes, there will be role-playing game stuff there. There always is. But, again, you gotta draw a line somewhere. I always do games that are available for purchase because, you know, demo stuff can change drastically. It's going to be good to see it, and I will never stop anybody from going to see it. In fact, for the purposes of this, I'm not just going to redo my post. I'm going to expand on some things and share some things that didn't make the list. But as far as when I post this, I always do stuff that's available because, you know, you want to be able to get to the stuff that is actually there that you can take home with you.
I just realized one of the games that I got to play at GaryCon with the creators is going to be there for the first time.
Which is that?
Swordcrafters.
Yes, it is.
That is a really fun game, guys. I got to play it at GaryCon, and it's fun.
It's the one where you actually make a little sword.
Yes. Sorry, I had to interrupt you there. I finally started pulling up the list, Mark.
Oh, feel free. No, the list is impressive. I'm not going to lie. And then the last guideline that I put is I don't usually, when I post this preview, I'm going to break this rule for this podcast because the podcast is different, But when I post my preview, I don't do expansions because, by and large, you don't need me to tell you if an expansion is worth getting. Usually, if you like the game enough to get an expansion, you already know that. Mm-hmm. So I will kind of just, like I said, I could just go down the line and literally read my thing again, but why bother? I'm going to put a link in the show notes with this, so there's going to be stuff that I highlight more than I did in this list. There's going to be stuff that I have on the list that I'm not going to worry about here, just because of reasons, arbitrary though they might be. But there are a handful of things that I want to make sure that I talk about. Make sure that if you're listening to this and you're going to Gen Con and you want to buy me something pretty, no, I mean, if you want to find some stuff that I think is worth seeing, worth going out of your way to get to, then I want to give you that information. One thing that I will start off with, because this got released after my review happened. It is a well-known, well-documented fact around this podcast that I am a huge Plaid Hat Games fanboy.
Yes.
That I have sworn allegiance to Isaac Vega, and that, my goodness, there's nothing that these guys make that I don't get excited about. This is especially true this year. Plaid Hat did not release what they were going to have at Gen Con until long after my preview came out. But literally everything they have, I want to point out to people. I won't spend any time discussing the two Phoenixborn. It's for Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn. Y'all know I love that game. More Phoenixborn are always good. So those are going to, there are two different Phoenixborns that are going to be released this year. A demo-only game, which wouldn't have made the list anyway. But I absolutely have to talk about, is a game called Comanauts. Just like Stuffed Fables, which is a game that blew my mind when they released it. Jerry Hawthorne is killing it with these storybook games. Comanauts is a game that's also going to be one of these storybook games, where each kind of page is a different kind of game, a different board, as this ongoing story is revealed. This one, though, whereas Stuffed Fables was very much pointed towards, like kids, like everyone was excited about playing it with their kids, Comanauts is really interesting in the fact that it's much more of this sci-fi story, and you are basically diving into the brain of this guy who created this machine that's going to pretty much destroy the world if we don't fix it, but he's in a coma. It's another storybook game from Plaid Hat. I want to be playing it. I'll skip the other demo because I'm going to gush about that one a lot, and talk about the game that is available from Plaid Hat, which just looks amazing, called Starship Samurai. As a guy who is always a fan of giant space robots, this game looks great. It looks like a very interesting kind of worker placement game, but with the added benefit of having cool Gundam-style robots, and the miniatures look really good. It looks like it's Isaac Vega. Isaac Vega does not make bad things. The game always looked good. Even when they kind of showed the miniatures last year at Gen Con, I was like, this looks amazing. Tell me more about it. But as I've kind of heard from some of the people who got previews of it, again, the Secret Cabal did a preview of it, and some other people have been talking, like the Dice Tower. They've all been talking about how they've gotten a chance to play it, and I've never heard anybody say anything bad about it. So that one is definitely worth checking out. That one, like I said, is listed as being available for sale, though I don't know exactly how many they're going to be. So that might be one that if you want that, you might want to go look at that really early. And then there's the one that I literally tweeted Isaac and said, bro, I need you to be serious with me. Is this the one you were talking about? The last time I was at Gen Con, I always go over to Plaid Hat, and I usually try to talk to Isaac because, again, that man is responsible for like 3 of my top 10 games of all time. So I was talking to him, and I said, you know, City of Remnants is a game that doesn't get near the kind of respect that it should. It's awesome. It's fantastic. It's a unique mess of awesomeness. And the 1 year I interviewed him, he said, yeah, I really want to revisit that and really kind of take a second swing at some of the mechanics and some of the themes we were dealing with in that. And I'm like, okay. That's and at cool. the time, I just kind of let it go. I said, okay, who, you know, he's got so many different things. He's got, you know, what, like umpteen different Dead of Winter games now. And this was before some of the other stuff that he's done. And he was, you know, neck deep in Ashes. And I go, it's going to take forever. And then a little bit ago, they announce Neon Gods. This is basically, for all intents and purposes, a revamped re-implementation of City of Remnants with a with an 80s or 90s sci-fi cyberpunk theme, because this set is set in the far-flung future of 2009.
So let me ask you this. If I buy that game, right, and set it on my shelf right behind my webcam and
you
not can't touch it,
because it's for demo only.
If I steal that game. Now, I will tell you all, this does happen. Demos get stolen.
Oh, yeah, no, every year.
And they quickly get pit on eBay, and then those people quickly get smacked down.
Oh, yeah.
Just to let you know, I would never steal a demo.
But, yeah, in case there's an announcement that it got stolen, it's not Daniel.
Yeah, it's not me.
But yeah, no, I need everybody who's listening to the sound of my voice right now, if you're going to be at Gen Con, I need you to go to the Plaid Hat booth. And I need you to demo Neon Gods, and I need you to tell me about it. More specifically, I need you to tell them that we need to review it, that when this game becomes available, they need to send us a copy. I think everybody should go and do that, because I want nothing more in my life than to take City of Remnants, which was one of my favorite games, one of my first, you know, it's not a heavy game by any regards, but it's a heavier game. It's one of the first heavier games I ever picked up in my library. It held the top spot in the library for 3 years. It was my number one. It's a beautiful mess, and the fact that Isaac is doubling back on it with all of the design knowledge and skill increase that he's had over the years, I want this game. I want it bad. I need it in my life now.
And guys, if they ask for an address, tell them Kingsport, Tennessee.
Yeah. but yeah, no, that I will tell you that, you know, at the end of the year, we always do our end of the year shenanigans. And one of the categories is publisher of the year. I got to tell you, somebody would have to do something dang impressive for me to not list it as Plaid Hat this year, because my goodness, they are nailing it on all fronts. Literally the only reason they didn't make the post on our site is because of the fact that they only just made these announcements like within days of us recording this.
You know what I've started doing now, just because I started looking at this stinking list, is I started making my shopping list. And I only have a set amount of money. So, because it's my birthday money, because my birthday is in August. So, but, you know.
It's important to plan ahead.
I know. And the one that really, really, and I've been eyeballing this, is Forbidden Sky.
Forbidden Sky made my list, yeah.
Yes, it looks amazing. Because I've been looking at the artwork for the past few weeks, and I forgot that it gets released for Gen Con. And
for those of you who are listening and have no idea what I'm talking about, there are a series of games, and this is the third of what we all believe to be a trilogy. There was Forbidden Island. Forbidden Desert is the second one. And now there is Forbidden Sky. And just like the previous games, like the first game had these cool like treasures that did nothing mechanically to the game, but was just like, these are the treasures. The second one had an airship that you literally built. Like a plastic airship that you had to find the pieces to, literally did nothing to the game, but heck yeah, it's going to be there. Yeah. And in this new one, they have a giant like 1950s sci-fi style rocket ship.
Yes.
But you know, apart from all the silliness, one of the things I'm really interested in the how Forbidden Sky works is that they're talking about the gameplay, and they say that you actually do, like, create electronic circuits. Like, I think it's not, like, literally you're making electronic circuits, but it's more like the cards that you play and the things that you do make electronic circuits. But I'm always fascinated by that idea of something technical being translated to a game mechanic. I think that's awesome. All right, I got to talk about this one. I already talked about the fact that I love giant robots. I'm excited about this one. I didn't know much about it until I was watching some stuff on the Dice Tower, because it is coming out from Arcane Wonders. It is part of the Dice Tower's Essentials line. It's called Critical Mass. And there are two different packs that you can get. One is Patriot versus Iron Curtain, a.k.a. the U.S. versus Russia.
Yeah.
And the other one is Raijin versus Archon, which I didn't look more into that one, but I think that one is Japan versus England. And my goodness, it is giant mech battles where it's a card game. There's no miniatures. There's no craziness like that. So you don't have to worry about the overwrought expense of it. But your little player board looks like the console of the mech, and you are playing like attacks and moves and stuff like that, and upgrades and all sorts of fun things to what looks like the console of a giant bipedal mech. Yep, sign me up. Like, for no other reason than that moment. Because I've been playing Mech Warrior games since I was a kid. I have been just super fascinated and just riveted to games where I get to pilot a giant robot. And this lets me do that. And I want to do that, and I want to do it badly. I can move on to another one if you're still...
No, this one actually, I was wanting to... Happy Little Accidents. Have you seen this?
I know that it's a Bob Ross party game.
Yes. So, like, you doodle something, and then obviously, or there's like a little accident on this card, and you have to draw something around this. It's pretty cool looking. So, and me and my daughter are on a big Bob Ross kick right now, which I think this would be pretty cool for the house, because we're actually going to take a Bob Ross painting class.
Nice.
There's a guy here locally that teaches it, and I contacted him, and he's like, yeah, it's $40 for per session. And I'm like, we're there. So we're already deciding on our best flannel, and we're going to try to find some fake afros to take the class in.
Oh, of course you need to.
Yeah, so it's just amazing. But then also the Talisman. Have you seen this? Talisman Legendary Tales. It's a card game.
Is it a Talisman game?
Yes, it is. It's got the Talisman font, but it's like not like the actual board game, and it's from Games Workshop.
I would hope not, because Talisman's kind of awful.
Well, no, it looks a lot better, trust me. But, you know, Talisman is one of those games that people try to put up there with HeroQuest. But you know what? They don't have a guy in Australia making videos about Talisman.
Yes, because Talisman is a game that happens to you. But we're not here to talk about Talisman.
But this is what happens. You get me off on GoTrails by sticking this stinking list in front of my face.
Oh, it's true. 540 titles, Daniel. All the trails that lie before you are going to lead to craziness.
The only thing that I know about this stinking list, okay, and I call it a stinking list for a reason, is because it's a huge list. And I've had to go through this list 3 years ago, when the list was out and I was there with Kevin. We seriously spent two Saturdays going through the list, seeing which board game has dice, writing down the name and the location and the booth it's going to be at. So we had our master list to go hit, and he bought over 1,000 dice that weekend.
Yowza. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to move on
sorry,
to another
sorry,
game.
Sorry.
I'm really interested in this one. I think I heard of it. Yeah. As I literally wrote about it on the thing. The first time I heard about this game was out of news coming from Gamma, which is the trade show where everybody talks about what new games are coming out. It's a game called Pantone. And if you've ever been down the paint aisle of your Home Depots or your Lowe's or, you know, any of these home improvement stores, you'll see the walls of, you know, paint splotches. And this is basically a game where there are a series of cards that look like those paint splotches. But what you do is that it's pretty much Pictionary, only using those colors, only using those swatches. And it looks really interesting because you have to be creative, because it's not like you can like shift it into, you know, like make cool, like actual like lines and everything. It's pretty much Pictionary, the Minecraft version. And I don't know. I really like the idea of how creative you're going to have to be on some of these. I saw some of the samples that came out, and people were doing like Santa Claus, but they could only do it with like red and white squares, and they had to somehow translate Santa Claus out of that. It looks really interesting, and it looks way more entertaining to me than a light kind of family game has any right to.
I think I found another one. I want Jurassic Park Danger.
Yes, the Jurassic Park game.
We're big Jurassic Park fans in our house too, so we go see the movies as soon as they come out, and we keep our sons away from the sequels from the 90s, so he doesn't have to go through all that. But we're excited about that. Have you seen the Circus Puppy?
The what now?
It's called Circus Puppy.
I'm sure I'll be looking into this.
It's from Renegade Games. And it kind of, it's a stacking game.
Oh, wait, yes, I did see Circus Puppy. Yes.
Yeah, wait, is that Renegade? I think I may have misquoted myself on that one.
But I don't know if it's Renegade or not, but I do know what Circus Puppy
is. Yeah, so it kind of reminds me a little bit of Rhino Hero, and so you have to stack your puppies against your opponent's puppies. So it looks pretty interesting, especially because, you know, I when I go to Gen Con, guys, I do look a lot at kid games because I have children. As you all know, plus also when we do have game days at the church, we usually have a lot of kids that have, you know, they come and, you know, they bring their siblings, the younger ones, and the younger ones are like, what games can I play? I would love to have every kid game in the world just for those kids, because if you start them young, they stay in it for a while.
Oh yeah. No, there's some good kids games out there. We're going to talk about one later. Though we've already talked about it on several other occasions. But before that, I'll skip a couple of these. There's part of me that wants to talk about that one, but we're running out of time, so I'm going to skip ahead. One game that has been 2 years in the making from Ignacy Cevicek of Portal Games. I love Ignacy, dude, not only because he's just an amazing guy, but also because he makes solid games. He's responsible for giving Alien Artifacts into my life. And, he makes good stuff. When he put out First Martians, which was last year, First Martians made my list. I'm like, I'm really curious how this works. But a series of rules problems and a very high barrier of entry kind of soiled, you know, the idea of First Martians to a lot of people. It's why you can usually get it on sale pretty cheap now. But he's coming out with another game called Detective. And it's a cool, like, narrative deduction game. Like, you're trying to solve a series of crimes. But there's a couple reasons why this one stands out to me as something that's worth looking into. One, it does a really good job of integrating an app. Which is always going to get me, you know, at least take a look at it, because I'm fascinated with the potential for that to be a thing in the future. It has the, you know, the fact that you're looking at different cases, like a series of different cases. But I was literally just listening to Rolling Dice and Taking Names today, and they were talking about the fact that they did a demo, and certain cards from individual cases, depending on how you play it, might end up going into other decks. Because there not only are there individual cases, there's actually an overarching case. So stuff that you reveal from each case in the game can be used to do this overarching kind of also this other bonus case. That's awesome to me. And one of the things that is kind of the finishing move that makes me want to check out Detective is that the people who have created the scenarios in this game actually weave real life stuff into the game. There are cards that tell you to go to the internet to literally Google certain topics and see what you find about certain things because it has relevancy to the case.
That reminds me of an old game on the computer. Did you ever see a game called The Stone?
No.
So, okay, you...
Oh, wait, yes!
Yeah, so what you did is you would go to your local game store where you would buy your awesome board games, and I had to actually drive 90 miles to find this. And this was like late 90s, early 80s, and you paid $10, and you got this box. And this box had a little stone in it, and on the stone was some glyphs that were engraved in the stone. So, and you had to go to the website, and this is how you registered that you bought the game. You would put your glyphs into the game and then submit it, and then you would create your account. And so what they would do is they would have a whole big grid of dots, and you would just click on them, and it would give you clues to answer the clues, and you'd have to do research on it.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I do remember that. I think I actually did that for a while.
Yeah, I did it too. I wish it would come back. That would be amazing. I'd do it all over again.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in seeing how they implement this game. And I'm also interested because of the fact that depending on how well this one does, like, Ignacy has straight up said that if it does well, they will make more. And what's going to be neat is that all they need to do in order to make more is to print out new cards. So, you know, you can keep the board, you can keep all that. It's basically, for me, like, I haven't ever bought Time Stories. Like, it's one of those games that it made my preview when it got released at Gen Con before. But I'll tell you what, man, if this does well, I would sooner have this over Time Stories just because... Yeah. I'm really interested in how they're integrating the internet and real world stuff and this app and how all of this comes together. I am fascinated by this.
You said it was Detective?
Detective.
I'm going to have to look at that one. Because
a modern crime board game.
I think I would really like that. There it is. I'm going to put that on my radar so I can go look at it. Because, I mean, things like that interest my wife as well. It says 16 and plus, but, you know, it seems like it's a pretty good looking game.
Yeah, no, and like I said, Portal does not disappoint. Every time I've ever gotten involved with a Portal game, I have not been disappointed. There are games that are listed among my favorites where I don't even own a physical copy of the game. Neuroshima Hex is still a game that I thoroughly enjoy. I only own it in app form. Like, Portal Games does good stuff.
Yeah, they do. Which Portal Games do I own? I have to go back and look. But yeah, I've never been disappointed by one of their games, whether I own it or somebody else owns it.
All right. Do you have another one? Because I certainly do.
Yes, I do. I do. You know, there's a lot of people out there in the world that like My Little Pony, but... Now it's My Little Scythe.
Okay, you beat me to it. Yep, there's absolutely no reason to not get My Little Scythe.
This is a game I've been looking at since they announced it, because I got Scythe when it came out. I love it. I can't get it to the table as much because there's not enough people willing to sit down with me and play it. But if I get this one, my kids can play it. You know, it's cute, and I love the miniatures on it, and I hope they're pre-painted.
I love the entire story of how My Little Scythe happened. Do you know the backstory to this?
No, I don't. So
okay, I'm going to, because of the fact that I know there are some people listening who cannot know this story. If you do know this story, just chuckle along with me as I recount what happened. So a dad loved Scythe, wanted to play with his little girl, and so they revamped it and rethemed it for My Little Pony. And they redid the board. They put actual like little My Little Ponies on the board as the people, and redid it so that his kid, his daughter, could play Scythe with him. And that ended up on Board Game Geek. And people were like, oh my goodness, this needs to be a real thing. This needs to be a thing that everyone can have. Is there a print and play option? And they made a print and play option. And it just kept getting more and more like it was viral basically as people kept passing this around. At some point, somebody said, I think they asked Tom Vassell, do you think that this would ever get published? And Tom Vassell, rightly so, said, there's no way that they're going to get the license for My Little Pony. And at some point he said, if this ever becomes a real thing, I'll eat my shoe. Well, if you've ever followed Jamie Stegmaier of Stonemaier Games, every time that he puts out a newsletter, he'll put at the bottom of the newsletter all the projects he's working on. And if it's been announced, it is just the name and the cover of the box, and he'll talk about how far he's come along. If it hasn't been announced yet, he has a code name for it. At some point, and I didn't notice this, like many of us didn't notice this, but at some point on the list, you saw a project, Eat a Shoe. And My Little Scythe is Stegmaier's answer to Tom Vassell saying, if this becomes a thing, I'll eat my shoe. And yeah, obviously they didn't get the My Little Pony license because, my goodness, I can't even fathom what that would cost. But all they did was take the actual characters, specifically the animal characters from Scythe, and made them
cute and adorable.
Yeah, they chibied up the animals from there. Wojtek is still my favorite of all. And they just did it. I love the fact that My Little Scythe has, instead of fighting, like, you're having pie fights, and you're getting like friendship points. And yeah. Oh my goodness, I love everything about
this. This is going to be that game that on Thursday morning that I'm going to have to walk up to the booth and go, can I buy this before we open?
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, it's. I think this is going to be my one big ticket item that I purchased this year, and I'm excited. The only thing is, I do hope those miniatures are pre-painted. And you've never heard me say this before, guys, because I do love painting miniatures. But the problem is, they're not going to be pre-painted. I know they're not.
Yeah, I'm about to say, do you want me to break your heart?
I know. But the problem is chibi miniatures. I love the way they look. I can't paint them hardly at all. And it could just be the miniatures that I've painted in the past. The only ones I've actually had the ability to paint was the Masmoras. But the thing is though, you don't use shading like on 28mm miniatures. I'm gonna go dork out for y'all for a minute. You can do shadings through washes and things like that. With chibi miniatures, you don't really use shades like that. You actually have to do blending on them to make them look really well because their skins are so smooth, or they're, you know, just the anime look that they have to them, and I'm not there yet. But I will be one day.
Yeah, no, My Little Scythe is great. There's no doubt about it. There are so many good games, but I'm going to have to skip talking about all of these because we are running out of time, and we're going to run long. It's not a problem. We do this every year when it comes to the Gen Con special. Oh, yeah. I don't care, but we're still going to try and be at least slightly respectful of everyone's time. I will point this one out because this one kind of completely went under my radar. I only saw this when the announcement came out with the BGG preview. So Smirk and Dagger, who makes awesome, like, take that kind of games. I have several of them on the shelf behind me. They kind of had a secondary imprint called Smirk and Laughter, and these games are more lighthearted games. They're not so much take that. They're more like, either they're not necessarily going to be cooperative, but there are games that are just a much more lighthearted experience. And one of the first games that they've got coming out for Smirk and Laughter is a game called Before There Were Stars. This is and now Daniel, you haven't looked at the list, so there's no way you've heard about Before There Were Stars. I'm going to give you a brief description of this game, and I want you to rate on a scale from 1 to 10 how excited you think I am for this. This is a storytelling card game where you are playing as the leader of a people recounting the creation myth of that people.
I give you a 5.
You lie.
No, I say you're up there at the strong 8, possibly a 9.
Oh yeah, no, it's 9, and it probably would be 10, but I don't know how the the actual nuts and bolts work together. We could be very well looking at a Once Upon a Time where I love this game, but I have to play it with the right people.
Right.
But to say that I'm excited about Before There Were Stars is an understatement. I'm so excited because this is basically like they put a couple cards in front of you and it's literally just pictures of constellations. And you have to use these multiples of these cards of constellations and use that to describe how the world was created. I want to be playing this now.
But that leads me to think, why are we not playing Microscope?
Why aren't we playing Microscope?
We need to play Microscope.
I want to be playing Microscope all the time. All
right, we're going to get in this. I'm making a deal. Anybody wants to play Microscope with us? I'm going to get the rules for it because I haven't bought the rules yet, but I love the idea of it. We're going to play Microscope. We're going to play it through the Google Docs. That's how we'll do it. Anyway, there we go. I'll list that out there.
Yeah, no, I am fascinated by this game. I want to be playing this game. I need this game in my life. Again, Daniel, do you have one or am I just going to keep moving on? Because I've gotten through at least the bulk of my list. There are, like I said,
there is one game I want to see. Okay, and it's only because of the historical value of this game. This game is Battle of Britain. It was teased last year, okay? And there's a lot of history behind this game. And first of all, because, you know, it's based upon the Battle of Britain. But the actual game itself, a lot of people don't realize. And the people that created this game right now didn't know that they couldn't own the rights to it without getting somebody's permission. Because Lou Zocchi of Game Science owns the rights to the concept of Battle of Britain.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I remember seeing that last year at Gen Con, walking up to the Game Science general manager and go, you realize this game's over here and you own the rights to this? And he didn't realize it. He said, really? And he went and talked to Lou. He had to go talk to them, and then they had to go do some back table negotiating. So I'm actually kind of excited. Now, the original version of this game included, like, instead of actual airplanes, you had these little bitty CHITs, cardboard cutouts of airplanes that were just little squares that had an airplane on it, and you just moved them around the board. But it looks like that they've actually got some really nice looking models for airplanes and stuff. And I've been getting a little bit more interested in World War II and World War I wargaming, so that's another reason why I want to look at it, because I wouldn't mind painting some of the little planes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a large swath of people who get very excited about old school war games. Not like, you know, miniatures war games, but like war games.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, this is understandable.
Yeah, we have a huge following for, what is that? I can't even think of it right now, but it's the, by Warlord Games. It's a World War II game that they do, and we have a huge group of people in this area that play it. So it's actually overtaking Warhammer 40K.
Wow.
In this area.
Okay, now I'm going to get into some of my honorable mentions. These were kind of just thrown onto the list that didn't quite meet the requirement, but my goodness, I still want to talk about them even more so because we're on the podcast and not that post. The first and foremost, the one that was like, if they were selling this, I would not shut up about it. It would be on this post in large, bold print, is a game called Holding On, The Troubled Life of Billy Kerr. This game is insane. I have been following this game since I first heard about it. It was an article. I can't remember where the article was. But like, I remember hearing the guys at Shut Up and Sit Down talk about it, which led me down the rabbit hole of finding, you know, discussions about the game. Originally, this game was about a guy who had Alzheimer's who was trying to remember his story before he forgot it. However, in the course of playtesting that, they found it to be entirely too depressing and no one wanted to play the game.
Yeah, I don't want to play this game.
So they changed it to a guy who was on a plane trip and he had a heart attack. He's trying to recount the stories of his life before he dies. You are playing as the nursing staff that have to balance play between keeping him alive and pulling his story out of him.
That's no, wait a minute. That's just as depressing.
I want to play this game so badly. Because what happens is that literally you're trying to piece together storylines that feed into each other. So you're going to be doing card, you know, card play and trying to do, like, I have this part of his story, but, you know, what does that mean? What does this mean about anything? But, oh, this ties to this. And at the same point, if you're not actively doing, like, all the stuff you need to do to keep him alive, you will eventually lose because long before you get his story, he is no longer with us. I want to play this game so bad. I am a glutton for games that have the potential for that gut punch moment. I want to be playing this badly.
Now let me ask you this. This game has yet to be released.
It is demo only at Gen Con.
Right. So why has it already got an 8.597?
Combination of a couple things. One, because they have been making convention circuits, so some people have played it. Two, you got to learn something about Board Game Geek. People rate games before they ever even begin.
That frustrates me all levels of I don't know. Anyway, sorry, but yeah, if you play this game, that's fine. I don't know if I will play this game.
I want to just constantly be playing it. I want to. Hook it to my veins. I want to be playing this game constantly.
Or am I going to put you in a hospital bed while we sit around you and try to figure out the story of your life?
You're going to try and figure out the story of why I think this game is so awesome.
I don't know. I might demo it. I don't know.
No, I fully acknowledge this is not everybody's cup of tea. That it's probably going to be more somber and sobering than most people are up for. You're talking to a guy who played and then we held hands and openly wept as I had to apologize to my wife for being a terrible husband. So this is my jam. another one that literally the only reason it didn't make the list is because of the guidelines. I don't do expansions. Otherwise, this would be a front runner on my list. Scythe: Rise of Fenris. We already talked about how awesome Scythe is. We already talked about my little Scythe. Scythe: Rise of Fenris is the third and what is supposedly going to be the final expansion for Scythe. It does, among other things, it makes it a co-op campaign game.
Well, that's interesting. Do you have to have the other expansion to play it?
No, you do not.
Because I did not buy the other expansion. Yes, I'm a horrible person. But this makes the game more interesting.
You do not need the other expansions. I'm sure, from what I've seen, that if you have the other expansions, they will be integrated into this. But from everything that I've read up, everything I've seen, you do not need to have the other expansions to play Rise of Fenris. And I want it. I want it in my life. There are some other, just some cleanup stuff. Just I want to say, Fireball Island is a thing. Island is going to be there.
I'm going to try to play Fireball Island. At least get some good pictures of it.
There's, you know, the folks at Druid City Games are demoing a game called Tidal Blades: Heroes of the Reef. I know next to nothing about gameplay, but my gosh, he's released miniatures and he's released some artwork for it, and gosh, it looks gorgeous. And after he did a bunch of the games that he's been making recently, I have no reason not to like fall in love with it. There's a part of me that really hopes that Samurai Jack Back to the Past is a good game. Samurai Jack is literally one of my all-time favorite cartoons ever created.
After the last podcast where I tore Samurai Jack down because I didn't enjoy it, I was a Powderpuff Girls person, I got made fun of at work.
As you should. Now look, I have lots of love for the Powerpuff Girls, but if you're putting them up against Jack, Jack wins.
No. Nobody can beat Blossom.
Before I go down the insanity that lends itself to, I'm going to go to a couple last ones. Arboretum is a cool little, like, really laid-back, like, card game. They're putting out a second edition at Gen Con, And one of the cool things about the second edition, especially if you get the uber cool deluxe edition, is that it features artwork from Beth Sobel. If you don't know who Beth Sobel is, go find some of the prettier games that are out there right now. The likelihood that Beth Sobel is the one who made them pretty, it's pretty solid.
Man, this do look nice.
Oh yeah, no, it's gorgeous. You've got things like Palm Island, which is a game that's actually put out by Portal Dragon, and the folks at Portal Dragon are in the tavern. I'm fascinated by this game mostly because they say that it's a game that you can literally play in the palm of your hand. It's fascinating to me. I don't know if I want that game, but at bare minimum, I'm fascinated by how that works. Reef is a thing. Reef is a game that's kind of like, I don't want to say it's a follow-up to Azul because it's technically a completely different game, but it's part of that series that Plan B is putting out. The reason it didn't make the list is because technically it was released at Origins, not Gen Con. But if you weren't at Origins and you wanted to pick up Reef, it's going to be there. God, there's so much stuff. There's this incredible list of things. If you're going to Gen Con, please let me know what you liked and what, you know, what you're looking forward to. If you're listening to this before you go to Gen Con, tell me what you're looking forward to. If it's afterwards, tell me what you enjoyed and why it was Neon Gods.
Sorry, guys. He caught me off guard.
I'm telling you, you have no idea. I've been waiting for this for years. It's finally here. All right. Again, y'all, this is going to be one of those episodes where we don't make the turn. This is literally just us gushing about something cool that's happening in the gaming world. If you're coming to us for glorious theological content, please come back. Or you can just go to Bard and Bible, where it's all theological content all the time. Daniel, is there anything other than Gen Con that you've got coming up?
Well, actually, on the 16th, I get to do a little thing locally at our downtown. We're having a few Christian rappers downtown, and they asked us to set up a booth down there in Kingsport, and so we could tell the community about what En-ROADS is and what we do for the churches and for the community. Also, in October, I have Conapalooza.
You may need to explain what Conapalooza is.
It is Kingsport's first real nerd con. I mean, that's basically the only way to put it. We've got everything from old Power Rangers showing up. We've got professional wrestlers there. There is a gaming library already, but I'll be stationed right outside that, and I'm going to have games I'm going to let people borrow and check out.
Nice. I always support, you know, us getting into other conventions.
Yes.
While I'm throwing this out there, if you're whether you're going to be at Gen Con or not, you can plan on hearing more about the next actual En-ROADS trip that is actually a ministry trip of ours, which is going to be, we're going to be taking a team out to PAX Unplugged. And by the time this episode goes up, I should have our first news posting kind of introducing folks to the team and talking about, you know, how we want to raise money to help get us there. This trip is potentially going to be really huge. We've got some very cool things happening, which include things like I'm actually commissioning an artist to do unique art assets for a thing that we're going to be handing out to people, which is, I'm very excited about that because I think it's going to be a ton of fun. We're going to be doing dice blessings and board blessings to hand out to people to kind of have a cool, fun kind of connection moment with people. And that's just one thing. Like, we're not going to have a booth. It's literally going to be us wandering. And so the entire team has been kind of tasked to come up with unique ways to connect with people. And I didn't announce it yet, but I'm going to literally announce my unique way of connecting with people. If you're going to be at PAX Unplugged, now don't worry, I'm going to say this again closer to the event, but why not? We're having fun and it's convention season. I'm going to try very hard. I don't know if it's going to be successful or not because I don't have any money to buy one and I don't have any local knitters who can make me one. So if you're listening to this and you're very good at knitting, pay attention because I might request your services. Have you ever seen those knit caps that are part helmet, part beard?
Yes.
I want to get one.
I had somebody make me one.
And I want to wear it all day Saturday of the convention. And I want to go around getting people to tell me one way that they feel that they are unique and special. And from upon hearing that story, I'm going to give them one of my Dwarf Bard's Rocks pins. So I'm going to be walking around as a Dwarf Bard on Saturday, handing out Dwarf Bard's Rock pins to anybody who can tell me that they are how they are unique. I'm just excited about that plan. But in more, you know, immediate news, like I said at the beginning of this, in the middle of this, and now at the end of this, because I really want to drive this point home. If you are listening to this and you are going to be at Gen Con, the Saturday of Gen Con, which I believe is the 4th?
Yes.
The Saturday of Gen Con, there's going to be an Inroads meetup. There's going to be a bunch of people that are going to get together and play. I can say that I would love it if the reports come back to say that we ran out of stuff before we ran out of people. But I will promise you that the first 20 people that show up is going to get a little Inroads swag bag. Because I sent Michael a bunch of stuff, including Dwarf Bard's Rock badges, some of our pencils, some stickers, some buttons. I just threw a bunch of that stuff in a box and said, here you go. And he said that he made 20 different swag bags out of the stuff I sent him and stuff that he had received prior to that.
Cool.
So, yeah, go play games, talk to cool people, and get Inroads swag. Again, the details for that are found in the tavern. All right, Daniel, do you want to lead us home or would you like me to?
I would like for you to tonight. Since, you know, I'll be going to Gen Con and you're not.
You're not a nice man.
No, I'm not, guys. I'm not. Really, I'm not. I'm a horrible person and a horrible human being.
But regardless of whether Daniel is a nice man or not, always remember that God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.